As I said, my name is Mae Brussel, and this program is called World Watchers. This is program number 843, and it is February the 1st, 1988. 11 more months, and we'll be around to Christmas. And if January is any indication of how fast that goes, we better do our shopping. I do want to say before I begin the program that the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kazoo's staff or board of directors. This hour, World Watchers, is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. I was separating some articles today and came across one that was in my files for a long time and I didn't remember having. That's the fun of going through your old articles and sorting them out. This article was published in 1973, November 17th, 1973, titled An Italian Political Death List. And the point about this list is the people involved were working with our intelligence community. It came from the New York Times out of Rome. Judicial authorities are examining a death list of 1,617 Italians whom the neo-fascist plotters had allegedly planned to assassinate. The existence of the list is a matter of intense nationwide interest, and membership on it has become a political status symbol. Four persons, including a lawyer, a doctor, were arrested in northern Italy with a warrant out for the fifth. They are charged with subversive activity with a view to committing a chain of crimes to prepare an ultra-rightist takeover. The investigators are looking into recent robberies to determine whether the alleged conspirators engineered them to raise funds. The list, together with several crates of other evidence, was seized in the villa of the arrested physician, Dr. Porto Casusicia of La Spensa, Genoa, who served as a volunteer with the German Navy during World War II and is said to have many neo-Nazi friends in West Germany. The full list hasn't been published so far, and then it goes on to say that the sources close to the investigation have named 67-year-old Prince Junio Valeria Borghese, now believed to be in Spain, as the mastermind of the conspiracy. Now, on a program that KKUP had this weekend, 14 hours on the Iran-Contra affair, I participated in part of that program, and the question was asked about the Nugenhan money. Was it important to today's world, and what did I think happened to money amounting to $500 million or $1 billion? That has not been claimed, that belonged to the CIA, and William Colby was part of the Nugenhan Bank and some very top admirals and generals from our Defense Department. And I said that I believed that this money could go to death squads, that people could be killed. And the importance of this money is that journalists and labor leaders, writers, actors, persons that are not sympathetic to fascism per se, can be wiped out, as there are death squads in this country, I know, and in Italy and all over the world. And Nugenhan had branches in 16 major cities. But an example of how this money could be used can be related to this particular story that goes back to 1973. This Borghese is the character who was rescued out of Italy by Otto Skorzeny, titled The Most Dangerous Man in Europe. And Skorzeny worked with the Central Intelligence Agency in Madrid. And then they set up the squads, the death squads in Bolivia, in Brazil, and Argentina that were employed by our Contras, used in 1981-82 until they went back to fight the Falklands War for Argentina. These death squads were Paraguay, Uruguay, and so forth. And Borghese worked with those and with Stefano Della Calle and Otto Skorzeny of the CIA. So a lot of people do not believe that there is a plan, a pre-made plan, to have a list. This one was a specific 1,617. So a lot of deaths that are airplane crashes or heart attacks or unanswered questions, untimely deaths of very important people fall into this category. And I know that this clandestine group have worked with James Angleton, who not only worked with, is a Knight of Malta, worked with our intelligence in Rome, but carried the Mossad desk for Israel simultaneously with a lot of the Israeli group that are not excluded from this kind of activity even though their excuse for existence was surviving the concentration camps. I found this very timely because I was talking about these kinds of death lists, and these persons were, in fact, and are working with our intelligence community. As a matter of fact, Borghese was one of the members of the board of Permandex that was identified in the Torbett document and also in Flamone's book, Paris Flamone's book on the Kennedy conspiracy. He's part of the board of directors of the group that set up the front for the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and many others. So if that list was just 1,617 Italians, and you take an American president, a senator that wants to be president, a civil rights leader, how many more people in America belong to the Borghese Permandex group? He was part of the Permandex operation. So it comes close to home, and for people that do not believe in conspiracy theories, I don't think there's many of them around anymore, at least not the ones that listen to Mae Bressel or David Emery, and I think this article is very important. As a matter of fact, on that program on KKUP, David Emery talked, there were many guests. This went on for 14 hours, and John Judge. And the two of them went extensively into the death of witnesses and the importance of people being killed, not only in Central America, as we talk about whether the Contras will be funded or not, but what they're doing in other parts of the world, they're doing to us, and Borghese links directly to our American murders and assassinations and the intelligence community. And I believe the most timely question to be asking is, who set up these death squads? And how are they acting today, and who's funding them today? The San Francisco Chronicle had an article yesterday on the Presidio molestation case that I keep saying I'll update probably next year, slip of the tongue, next week. I'll get into it, but there was a story, five counts are taken away from the Presidio molestation case. The United States U.S. Attorney drops five charges. There were 60 children molested, and many of them had venereal diseases. That was one of the criteria. Of those, Mr. Hambright was only going to be charged for 10 of the molestations. Now they've dropped it down to 6 children and instead of 12 counts with the 10 children. And the excuse is that these were people too young to really be able to describe the alleged abuse that took place, even though they have venereal disease. So they're whittling this case down with no intention of having Michael Aquino be a part of this case of the U.S. attorney going into it, even though a 3.5-year-old child described the home, recognized the house, exact house, on a street where she could look up and down at various homes and describe the interior of the house, which was, in fact, as she described it, it is not being touched by the investigation of the Presidio case. The topic of George Bush is in the news constantly, and I think it will be building up. I think the powers that be have decided that he is now expendable. The Republicans are all bouncing on him. What they don't want is the re-election or the election of Bush, and just as Richard Nixon was re-elected after the Watergate arrest in 1972. He did win the election, but then he was out with the Watergate investigations that then went into the intelligence community and a lot more. And would be impeachment, but he resigned quickly. And I think the Republicans know, Robert Dole and Pat Robertson and the others, that there are a lot of pieces of evidence that George Bush is very much involved in the Iran part of the Iran-Contra scandal and the Contra part in the arms and breaking the Boland Amendment and working with the people involved in both areas. So the Republicans have decided that he's expendable. And now George Shultz is saying that, yes, Bush was at these meetings, and Caspar Weinberger is saying it, and Edwin Meese, and Donald Reagan, the only one who can't remember is Ronald Reagan, which makes him either very senile, and it's time for him to get out of office, or they're all for against him. And after Bush's comments about being at the meeting, the president was asked if he was at the meeting. No, he wasn't. So all of his top aides say he was, and the president said he wasn't. Now, to continue the scandals, the Iran-Contra scandals, the news is filled with the story of Edwin Meese and the oil deal, the Iraq pipeline, and the Bechtel Corporation that George Shultz came from, and Caspar Weinberger, and the payoff that they wanted to give to Shimon Peres to have him not bomb the Iraq pipeline. I had that story on World Watchers November the 2nd, 1987. It's program number 830, if you have the broadcast and the sheets. I talked about the Overseas Private Investment Corporation and the tangled clients. It involved Edwin Meese and went into the details of the WedTech Corporation and how his attorney E. Robert Wallach already made a $1 million profit, attorney's fees, on the proposal of the pipeline, and Meese got to invest his $60,000 into it, and then the corporation that the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State came from, the Bechtel Corporation, would be building the pipeline. And then to add to that scandal, the story breaks about the offer to Shimon Peres. Will you bomb the pipeline? We'll give you money in your pocket if you don't bomb the pipeline. Now, it's hard to really figure out the team players or the mentality of the people in the news today. It's very confusing for a lot of people because it defies logic. Forget the morality or the ethics of it. Using the corporation that Weinberger came from, or Schultz, and using WedTech, where Meese's lawyer and chief investor are part of that terrible scandal. But Israel is allegedly an enemy of Iraq. That's why they supply arms to Iran. Iraq and Syria are supposed to be their most mortal enemies. So visualize Shimon Peres, who's willing to put money in his own pocket to allow an oil pipeline to go through that would be to the detriment of his own country. And you have to wonder who these people are serving. The team players are so disloyal. It's like Michael Deaver writing about Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan. I just wonder where in the world these people are coming from. They're not only sleaze, but they're double sleaze. And there's no loyalty among these thieves. I also mentioned in the same broadcast that that company, Overseas Private Investment Corporation, also gave Costa Rican John Hall, living down there, an American citizen, also a Costa Rican citizen, a $375,000 loan that can't be accounted for. He was getting about $10,000 a month. He was a liaison of the National Security Council to the Contras and of the Central Intelligence to the Contras. And this loan came through Robert Owen, formerly with Robert Keith Gray Associates, and then with Oliver North in the National Security Council. And Hull's collateral wasn't registered, and he absconded evidently with the fees and kept $375,000. And there's no accounting for where in the world that money went. He got $800 a month from the CIA. And so it's the same company, and it not only involves Iraq pipelines, but it involves the John Hull scandal, which is absolutely horrendous. So Meese has made $60,000 investment into a company, and it's the same Shimon Peres that I keep talking about that flew to Cameroon with 17 doctors after the explosion at Cameroon that I believe was the testing of the neutron bomb for the United States. Now, these payoffs to Shimon Peres for that amount of money for the not bombing the Iraq line may have something also to do with Cameroon. These people have a track record of working together on some very shady deals, and this kind of money that's transacted, there has to be other reasons why he would take this money, and it may be payment for silence. There's a sad, long news article in the New York Times. I won't go into many of the details because I really want to update stories on AIDS. But it's titled, New Surge of AIDS in the Congo May Be an Omen for Africa. And I sincerely believe that this disease is set to wipe out all the black population of Africa, if possible. The article describes increasingly the disease is reaching into the middle class. And it also says study traces AIDS in African children. The infection is likely in 1 of 15 if they get transfusions for malarial anemia, if they have malaria or anemia, and get any kind of a transfusion, 1 out of 15 of the children is getting AIDS. And that is a visible tragedy, just as Mozambique is or Ethiopia. And I think we have long overdone the Holocaust in Auschwitz of what happened to the European Jews. If we have sympathy or caring, we're watching millions of people being destroyed right in front of us. And the sound of silence is horrendous, just as it was at the time the Nazis were doing their work. And I certainly hope that some people will care enough to trace the origins of AIDS and the testing of blacks for a biochemical warfare in Africa and the Fort Detrick connections, because to me they're so obvious, and I just don't think most people want to admit that we're really into that kind of activity, but I believe we really are. Another article, not an article, a series of articles that's important, and I won't do much on this because it's well covered in all the news stories, is the FBI investigating groups who oppose the Reagan policies. Now, Reagan goes into these various organizations, or as people do, and the Center for Constitutional Rights has gotten through Freedom of Information indication of breaking into various offices from 1981 to 85. Well, anybody who spoke Reaganese, and not many people do, I have a very close friend who speaks it with me, we watched Reagan in California through the Army days, the Army surveillance of people, the Isla Vista, the People's Park, the Mind Control Center at UCLA, the SLA, the Manson family that created terrorism up and down this coast, and the files that were kept on the United Farm Workers, on the gay activists, Venceremos, and so forth. And those files were put into a Los Angeles Police Department office, where they were ordered by the government to be destroyed in 1975. And then we found out a few years ago, in 1983, January 83, that these files were not destroyed, that they were put into a $100,000 computer and went from the police department to the Office of Western Goals, run by Ollie North's friend Carl Spitz Channel, and also on the board is John Singlaub. Now, Singlaub's death squads could eliminate 1,000 domestic people, such as the death list in Italy. He works with Borghese and worked with Otto Skorzeny in the same team. So we're not far away from deciding who lives or dies or has these car crashes or heart attacks or whatever, or strange suicides go flying out of windows. And if you followed Ronald Reagan in California, not everybody had the opportunity to follow him like Californians did, and not every Californian watched him like they should. This is real Reagan operation. This is what he did for 8 years in California. This is what he did, well, during his entire presidency. And keeping these files is just adding to the old files. And it's very dangerous. It's more dangerous now than it was before, because now the soldiers of fortune and the gung-ho survivalists are training to take over, and I don't want to say this lightly, take over this parts of the United States, and they will have their list of who they want to eliminate. Remember, the Robert Keith Brown worked with Lamar Hunt when they started the AVS group, American Volunteer Group, AVG group, that I've talked about many times, that allegedly was to kill 10,000 political liberals in the United States. That was in Jim Hogan's book, Spooks. Very few people take it seriously. I've had that point on the air year after year, or week after week almost. But Robert Brown was in Grenada with North and with Michael Ledeen and with Admiral Poindexter, and Robert Brown trains the mercenaries that were involved down in Honduras and El Salvador and Nicaragua. And he's the right arm of John Singlaub, who started Soldier of Fortune for him. And the people that work with them are in and out of the White House and the National Security Council. So these computers are probably in every major police department. The only reason they were exposed with the Western Goals was because of a lawsuit of various plaintiffs, about 20 or 15 plaintiffs, saying their civil rights were violated and that these files were supposed to be destroyed, and the police department had them. And then when they wanted to trace them, they traced them to the garage of Mary Love, the wife of the man who was taking them, J. Paul from the police department. And they went to John Reese, the super covert action counterintelligence chairman of Western Goals. And then into the hands of Edward Teller and George Patton III and Singlaub and Hans Stenzel of the Luftwaffe and the German offices of Western Goals. They have German offices, and I've done many broadcasts on Western Goals. If you want to obtain those, you can contact me, and I'll tell you which ones they were. This Italian story of wanting to kill 1,617 as a person from Germany, a Nazi from Germany who was part of that plan, and the continuation of those plans is the offices of Western Goals in Germany are a continuation of the same matter. So the FBI story is covered on a lot of the news media and the going into the offices of people opposing Reagan's policies. This is just one more example of continuing what he was doing out here, and he never has stopped. The head of the Knights of Malta passed away in Italy this past week, and there was just a short notice. Angelo De Mogiano, 82 years old, the head of the Knights of Malta, Sovereign Military Order of Malta. He lived in Milan, a Milan lawyer of noble birth. Many of the Knights of Malta are supposed to be noble birth. He's been the head of it since May 62, and the important thing they mentioned is that there are 10,000 members in 90 countries, 10,000 members of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, which have literally invaded the intelligence or the military branches of governments to assure the Roman Empire stays secure and on top of all matters. This Grand Master of the Knights of Malta passed away, but in just reading the obituary, you get the figure of how many soldiers they have, the Vatican has, working for them. There was a brief notice that caught my eye just because of the religious people involved. It was a threat made against the PTL President Richard Dorsch, Jessica Hahn's minister, a man of God, Reverend Gene Profeta, demanded in 1984 that Dorsch give Jessica Hahn $265,000 payment. And the interesting threat that the article refers to, threat triggered the Hahn payment. He said that the minister said he would come to Charlotte, North Carolina, and when he got finished with Jim Baker and Dorsch, we would never be able to do anything else with a woman for the rest of our lives. So you know what part of the anatomy they were going for. One minister is threatening the other manager, president of PTL, that he's going to go after Jim Baker and Dorsch's genitals, I suppose. Very nice language, and this is what they were threatening. Last week, I was mentioning the team that was appointed by Ronald Reagan to take over the plans of the Defense Department for 20 years. And this is so important, I want to mention it and update it again. An article that was in the New York Times called Applying Military Brain to Military Brawn, the assignment of this team chaired by Dr. Fred Ickley, the head of the New Strategy Commission. And I also mentioned another article, Foreign Policy, run by the Security Elite. This was San Jose Mercury, November the 8th. And a third story, when the commission finished their work, the blueprint of new generation of brilliant conventional weapons, Pentagon will move away from NARMs. And this is about the Commission on Integrated Long-Term Strategy, the blueprint for the 20th century. And I can't repeat this enough, because this week there will be the vote on whether Contras get money or don't get money. But these people have decided and determined that they will either invade Nicaragua or invade Nicaragua. Those are the two choices. So that no matter how many people you tell your congressman to turn down the votes, and it's a worthy cause to say don't vote for Nicaragua funds. These policies are made a long time in advance, and I firmly believe that the only way to stop this kind of activity is to hit the power structure. On this program on KKUP, various people were presenting information, and Daniel Ellsberg was on, and Danny Sheehan, and Martha Honey, and Sarah Nelson, and John Judge, and Barbara Honiger, and a lot of people contributing, Brian Wilson, on the problem of funding Nicaragua and the suit that Danny Sheehan has. But in order to assure that these things don't happen, that they don't happen again, we have to some way find that a man who's elected the president doesn't have to take orders from Kissinger and Brzezinski and Fred Ickley on what is going to happen for the next 20 years. It's already decided what they will do. And one of the things they decided, the blueprint, as I mentioned last week, was to have certain areas where you'd have continuous wars, that they wouldn't be solved, that they would go on continuously and low-intensity conflicts, and that they would be part of the operation that would be written into the plans. Now, a gentleman whose name I've had on the air many times, Fritz Kramer, I referred to an article a while back, program number 779. It was August 27, 1981, that faceless Fritz Kramer at the Pentagon shares offices with the Undersecretary of the Defense Department, Fred Ickley. Kramer has occupied a post at Undersecretary Fred Ickley's office in the Defense Department in 1981, right at the point that his proteges are preparing to assume emergency rule by decree over the United States. And it's very important, again, to know if Fritz Kramer was the Waffen-SS Fritz Kramer that was Hitler's right-hand man with Otto Skorzeny, because Skorzeny rescued Borghese, and Borghese has made a lot of policies in the United States and with the intelligence. And Fritz Kramer has his proteges, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, and these proteges of his work right with Fred Ickley. And at this time, he was working at the Office for Emergency Planning at the Defense Department. And that went under Mr. Gefreda and Ollie North, and North a protege of these very people. So Fred Ickley, who made the blueprints for the next 20 years, and then just last week said now he would step down, and Richard Armitage, linked to Theodore Shackley and Kung San, the drug traffic, would take his place. Fred Ickley is so important because of the Office of Emergency Service, that one incident, one agent provocateur incident, just like the Reichstag, and we'd be in the hands of this faceless Fritz Kramer and Fred Ickley, and it may be that's why Ickley stepped down, so he could then work in the emergency service right with and under Fritz Kramer. And Kramer also shares offices with Daniel Graham of Star Wars. In the Washington Post, February of this past year, 1987, there was an article about Fred Ickley, and he warned about people fighting contra aid. He said, you risk a new Vietnam, and if you turn down, and this is part of his plans, the Defense Department said that if you turn down money for the Contras, then you people who refuse that will force us, like in Vietnam, to go into Nicaragua. The people that don't want contra aid will be responsible for the invasion. Now, they've already spelled out what it would take, and the invasion of Nicaragua would be the responsibility of those very people who don't want the death squads, who don't want the terror, who want peace in Central America. And Fred Ickley, this article says, an architect of current U.S. policy in Central America, said a cutoff of U.S. aid to the Contras would free Nicaragua to become another Cuba that would be tied to Moscow, and that would require a massive U.S. investment and a large permanent presence of U.S. forces in neighboring countries to keep Nicaragua from exporting insurgency and terrorism. Ickley said the surveillance and manpower would cost $7 billion to $9 billion a year. He thinks the Defense Department should allocate to literally take over Costa Rica and Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador. Now, if we divided the $9 billion a year between the five countries in Central America, everybody would have homes, everybody would have clothes, medical clinics, schools, libraries. Imagine the waste we spent in Vietnam, $1 million an hour. Imagine the waste of saying, if you don't give contra aid, we're going to allocate $7 to $9 billion a year. It is total insanity, and that's the Ickley, who's the protege and co-partner of Fritz Kramer, and that gives us an excuse to have all the countries in Central America. Hitler said, don't worry about North America. If I have South America, I can take America. And this is literally taking the Fritz Kramer plans with Fred Ickley and then making all of those countries part of a massive America that they literally belong to us. Their economies are militarily related and so forth. And this is very scary, that kind of money that they're willing to put. So one of the alternatives, of course, is to invade Nicaragua. And Parapolitics, that came out of Europe, it's printed in France, mentioned the intervention and the plans of the extreme right in an unofficial war in Nicaragua. I'll continue on that in a moment because the subject of Nicaragua is timely. We'll take a one-minute break first and give you time. I hope you people tape this off the air. One reason I take the break at the half hour is so that you can turn your tape recorder over. I hope you tape it, listen a few times, and then you can erase it if you want, but it's better to understand if you tape it. I also want to announce that tomorrow, February the 2nd at noon, in front of the Monterey Post Office on Hartnell Street, people from the Monterey Peninsula will gather to demonstrate to Ronald Reagan that more than 60% of the American people support peace efforts in Central America and say no to Contra 8. We shouldn't say this to Reagan. We should be saying to Fred Ickley and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger. The announcement I received was the demonstration will feature placards, tables with letters and telegrams to sign, leafletting, and speakers who have recently returned from Central America. This action is endorsed by the following organizations: the League of United Latin American Citizens, National Lawyers Guild, Monterey Salinas Chapter, the Latin American Solidarity Committee, the Outreach Committee, the Monterey Peninsula Unitarian Church, the Monterey County Sane Freeze Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and the Monterey County Sanctuary El Refugio. So if you want to go tomorrow at noon in front of the post office in Monterey and demonstrate your feelings, that would be appropriate and nice. And I do believe that visibility counts, but I also believe that there sometimes should be handbills naming the kinds of people who are behind these operations and smoke them out and ask if the next president is elected, does he take these orders from Fred Ickley and Fritz Kramer? And who are these people anyway? Ickley came from Switzerland, a Swiss banking family. So I always think we have to get a handle on these people and see what they're doing. And just the fact that money goes to Contras has never been enough for me to handle.